Hello and welcome to Nerd Girl Musings Podcast. My name is Jen and I'm so glad you're here. So today is my birthday and that's what we're going to talk about today. The complexities around a day like today for an adoptee, because like many other adoptees, I struggle greatly with this day. I've talked about it before. I think I've done at least one other podcast with the birthday theme. And so today I thought we'd go through a little bit more of the education side, and then I can share some of the pieces that I have struggled with within that. So this year, I feel like I'm even more isolated than I've ever been. And I don't know if that's just being in my own space now, and so I control who comes and goes, and I'm not really sure. So, but in true me fashion, I have not asked for what I really want. Part of me does want to be celebrated and enjoy the day like so many other people get to do. And part of me doesn't want any acknowledgement at all. And I know how unfair and unrealistic that sounds. Like, well, what do you want? Do you want people to ignore you, or do you want people to acknowledge you? And I get that. But that's also part of what goes on in the brain for an adoptee. And you know, thanks to the power of social media, like Facebook, for example, I will have dozens of people that are going to comment and wish me a happy day and tell me they hope it's as fabulous as I am and blah, blah, blah. But very few of them actually remembered it was my birthday or care about the day itself or the significance to me. Now, there are a few people that that are aware of what some of these struggles are like and how challenging a day like a birthday can be for an adoptee, or specifically for me, but very few. I ended up taking the whole week off, as it turns out. I had started with just taking my birthday off, and then I thought, well, maybe I'll take a Friday and I'll give it a long weekend. And then I was like, well, why would I go into work for one day? So then I took the middle day, so then I have 5 days off, and I was very methodical about choosing things to do every single day leading up to my birthday. Because that is just the one day I couldn't quite get myself to make plans, because I generally will wish that I could cancel and that I'll get grumpy about it. And it's just a whole thing. So it's one thing if, like, on the middle of the day I go, hey, let's go out for dinner, and it just happens to be my birthday, versus let's go out for dinner for your birthday to celebrate. Like, there's a difference there for me. And I know it's semantics, but it, again, brain. You know, I've got some cleaning to do in my apartment. I've got to get a couple of meals prepped for the few days I work before my weekend again. And my folks will be here on my weekend. So, you know, I've got some stuff to do there. And I've got my favorite cake lady making me a cake just how I like it, with extra frosting and a whipped cream center. Yum. It's always a treat to get to chat with Karen and catch up for a little bit. You know, we only see each other a couple times a year, but she is my cake lady, and I spread her fame far and wide on that thing. Her baking is just out of this world. You know, I had some plans to meet up with a friend for the farmer's market and then do some lunch to catch up, and that particular individual has been a great source of strength and support for me over the past few months as I was working to get myself back on my feet and get into a better headspace. You know, and thankfully my cousin is nearby, so we were able to corral her into some lunch as well and had a blast. I was supposed to also do dinner in the evening with a friend of mine. And if I'm being honest, this continues kind of the frustration of this whole time for me, is she couldn't commit to anything. She said, I'll let you know. And that was like 2-3 weeks ago. So that was all the answer I needed. I just didn't plan on it anymore. And that's the, yeah, that just adds insult to injury for someone like myself. But as far as today, I really struggled. My cousin had asked to like go out for lunch or something, and I initially said yes, and then she gave me an out. So then I said, "I'll let you know," because that's just how I operate, and likely I won't want to do anything anyway. But I wish I understood more as to why I get this way. It's like a week-long melancholy that nothing can really shake. I can get distracted from time to time, but it's always sort of bubbling under the surface. And it can come out at some of the oddest times and in the strangest ways. But if you do a Google search or a YouTube search, you will see that there are many adoptees that feel the same way. Specifically, I would say it's more adoptees that have come out of the fog is kind of what they call it. So when you're in your initial adoptee bubble where everything is great, grand, wonderful, oh, you had this happy life. It was so much better. It was, you know, the life you could have had would have not measured up at all. And I'm so thankful and grateful and blah, blah, blah. But then once you kind of come out of that fog of understanding the trauma that lives behind adoption, and you could be raised by the best family on the planet, and you will still have some deep-rooted trauma that can present in very different ways. So these are some of the things that go through my mind leading up to my birthday and like the days surrounding it specifically. So I start thinking about like, is this one day that they think of me? I don't know if they think of me any other day of the year, but this would have been one important day in their lives. Do they think of me at all? For me, it's like a date to grieve these ghosts and memories that I will never have for a life that I didn't get to live. Kind of like that alternate timeline type of thing. I often start thinking about, did they ever anticipate my birth with joy? Like, was there a moment in time where they were really excited and happy and couldn't wait? Or was it always a stressful, upsetting circumstance? And for me, it's also a reminder that the date that I was born only to be relinquished later. I only had that one birthday with her. And I was physically connected to a woman I never got to know. And I still don't understand why she then kept me for an additional 9 months before relinquishing me. Those are things I think about, like, what could I have done as a 9-month-old? And I know there's nothing that a 9-month-old could do that would lead to that, but that's where I start fixating on what did I do? Where was my fault? It's a reminder of how little I know about myself, or a reminder that I was abandoned in a way. I've never quite been able to express this to my family, because now I'll typically get a text message saying happy birthday, but it's just not a connection to me, and that almost makes me feel worse because it makes me feel like I'm ungrateful in some way for the life that they've created for me and allowed me to live. As I've gotten older, my anxiety around my birthday gets stronger, and the more I push people away during this time. So it never used to be quite this bad, but as I've gotten older, I do push people a little further away. But so few have ever tried to understand or even recognize that that's what I'm doing. And so sometimes I wonder if somebody gets that, like they can recognize the signs, like, oh, okay, so I see what you're doing now. So now that you're trying to do this, I'm going to do this in response to that, because I know that this is partly, you know, your brain protecting you or whatever, you know, psychoanalyzing you want to do there. But, you know, I think that kind of ties into, I once read, adoptees need to feel that they matter to other people. So just think about that for a moment. How many people do you know that need reassurance, right? So imagine living your whole life feeling like you just don't know. And you need to constantly know that you matter to someone because you just don't feel like you do. I know for myself that this has been very much a lifelong process and in so many aspects of my life, I look for, do I matter to you? And I'll look for those clues that, nope, just go figure. I knew I didn't matter there, or, oh, okay, they get it. I matter here. And, you know, I don't do that with everybody. I don't want to think that, you know, I'm doing this with my coworkers or, you know, something like that. But for people that I'm close to, I do look for it if I matter to them or how they show me that I matter. And it doesn't mean buy me gifts, buy me things. Sometimes it's seeing me, sending me a text, letting me know that I'm here and that you know that I'm here. You know, years ago, there was a thinking that the earlier you adopted a child, the more of a blank slate they would be. As it turns out, that is actually highly inaccurate. You know, adoption is about disassembling and reassembling of families on their various family trees, which can sometimes impact up to 16 family trees. So there are things that they have now learned and studied over time that adoptees bring into this new relationship. So into this new family, whether it's a kin adoption or, you know, somebody that's not biologically related. So the first one is genetic memory. That's the memory that's unconscious and that occurs while you're in utero. So there was a theory that, you know, like I said, babies were blank slates and so nothing happened and, you know, it's all fantastic fairy tale, but genetic memory will inform some of the earliest memories of your being. If your mother was upset or stressed, the baby feels that. If there was joy and happiness, or maybe as things went on, it got more stressful. So that impacts you as you're developing. Another thing is separation trauma. So I automatically think of my poor little old dog and his separation anxiety. And so it was previously thought that babies were unaware of this separation. That again, the earlier we do this, they're not going to attach. It's, you know, it's fine. They'll create new pathways to love this new stranger that we place them with. But there's research that the child being removed represents separation trauma. It impacts certain regions of the brain, which is all unconscious. So you're not aware that this is happening. You're not aware until sometimes, you know, later in life when you start piecing together all the different attachment styles and the way that you need affection and all these other things, you can start to put these pieces together and go, aha, I see where this is coming from now. Another thing is attachment. So at what extent is the child able to bond with this new adoptive family? This can be a challenge for adoptive parents who again think that they've got this blank slate child. And they sense that there's rejection. Like from what I understand, that there's kind of two different responses by these infants or these children. Is it can be either like screaming their head off all the time, can't quite seem to calm down, or this never made a peep, just never did anything out of line. And so they were an easy baby, an easy one to care for. And if adoptive parents are not prepared for that. They may not know how to handle what phase this child is going through. I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine who was adopted many years ago, and she shared that because she grew up in an orphanage in China, that she, when she first came to the U.S. and was in her new adoptive home, she would constantly clean because that's what she was required to do as like a three-year-old. And so that's what she would default to. And she was just always cleaning, and her adoptive family thought, oh, how cute. Look at that. She wants to clean. No, that's trauma. But it's learning those things as you get older. So then we've got fantasizing is another one. This is mainly revolving around the biological parents. And some adoptive families can really struggle with this, and they can't accept that the child may think of that previous family and what that reality would look like. So I know for myself, I grew up outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan. And anytime I would go into Grand Rapids, because it was the largest city right there, I would always be looking around and be like, oh, they've got my hair color. Oh, their legs look like mine. I wonder if we're related. And I didn't know at the time how close that actually could have been because of how close in proximity my biological family was to where I grew up. But those are the kind of things that you have, these small little fantasies of like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe that's somebody I'm related to. Or I know some people would talk about, they would see something on TV and then they would be like, oh, maybe my biological mom is like Madonna or somebody famous. And they would kind of fixate on what would that look like. And it's such a different life than the life that they currently live. How you integrate. So another thing that the adoptee brings is integration of adoption status into the identity. So everyone has an identity in the place in the world that you feel that you belong. So adoptees need to integrate that more into who they are. So I went back and forth on this as I was growing up. So when I was really small, I latched on to the being special or chosen narrative, because that was the information that was shared with me, is that I was picked, I was special, I was chosen from all the others. And then I went through a stage where I didn't want anyone to know, because I just didn't want to be different from anybody else. It's hard enough being a kid, but then to have this different thing like, oh, you're adopted, because then that became a negative, and I didn't want anyone to know. So I stopped talking about it. I stopped making a big deal of it. And I just wanted to just keep my mouth shut and never mention it again. And then the final thing is internalizing and externalizing certain behaviors. So as adoptees, the child can be withdrawn or gets detached. And that's where you hear the, oh, they never cried, they were an old soul. But that can be the shock and the trauma of the adoption. Another thing, and this is the one that I thought was most interesting about behavior, is lying and stealing and pushing you to the limit as a parent. And it says that was done to try to prove that they're worthy of love. Because if someone got angry and upset, then they must be worth that time and investment, even if it was in a negative way. So for me, I was a lying kleptomaniac as a kid. And I had sticky fingers like you wouldn't believe. I still remember I was 4 years old down in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I was wearing white jeans and we went shopping for the day. It must've been a cooler day because it was in April, so it shouldn't be that cold. But by the time we got back to the hotel, my mom looked at my pants and she said, well, what do you have in your pockets? I said, nothing. I don't have anything in my pockets. And my pockets were bulging. Like I had so much crap shoved in my pockets. And so my mom was like, okay, let's empty this out. What do we got here? Anything that was small enough that I could pick up and put in my pockets, I did, from every store we went to that day. So, you know, I lied about it. And then all of my treasures were there and I had to go back and apologize and turn them in as much as we could, figure out who they belonged to. And they were stupid things, thimbles, fingernail clippers, it just stupid stuff that had like a sunset and a beach scene or something on it. But that, I don't know, did I do that just to prove that I was worthy of somebody caring that I did something wrong, even though it was negative attention versus positive attention? You know, and as an adult, I still struggle with that, feeling worthy of love or being able to accept love. It's been a battle my whole life, because anytime someone shows me love, I think, well, you know, that's only until something else happens, or I'm sure I'll screw that up, or it's just a weird thing, a little quirk for me. Adoptees, and I think we talked about this before as well, adoptees are more likely to abuse substances or to attempt suicide than their peers. Mental health struggles, depression, the trauma of all of it is not uncommon for an adoptee. And I know I have shared my own personal struggles that I've had with this in the past. It's something I have to work on all the time as an adult. It doesn't magically disappear. That requires constant work, and it can be a very lonely journey when nobody understands that part of it. A lot of people are able to get great stories from their parents on, you know, your conception story or how you came to be type of thing. Adoptees don't get that. I have no idea what my conception story is. I'm 47 years old. I have no clue. I don't know how I came to be, other than the small amount of information that's been shared with me. Were you as an adoptee able to talk openly and honestly about those experiences and about what that feels like for you? Most probably would say no. Because again, you fall into the, oh, well, now they're being ungrateful and they should be thankful for the home and the life that they have. Adoptees are just having normal reactions to very abnormal situations. The history of adoption is anchored in secrecy and shame. And there needs to be some acknowledgement of trauma for the adoption. And that's the part where for so many years, it was just this flowery language and, you know, the blank slate thing. And so that all sounds great. But there's this whole back alley of what it really is like. Something else that adoptees can struggle with is the language of how you were described. So again, that, are you grateful? Are you thankful? And, you know, if you ever acted out, it was automatically, well, you're ungrateful for what we've done for you, that type of thing. And let's not forget going into the doctor's office and having the doctor comment on your paperwork and having no medical history and then commenting how much you look like your adoptive parent. And I don't know that doctors really understand, like, that's not actually a positive thing. Like, don't tell me I look like somebody that I am not related to, because then that dismisses who I do look like or where I came from. And it's still one of my most frustrating things when I go into a doctor's office and I have to fill out that whole medical history thing and I have to write unknown, unknown, unknown. You have to check all those damn boxes. And at the bottom somewhere, I'll try to write in adopted. And then they still talk to me about it and they still ask me if I have any information. They still want to quiz me on it. I have started to hear that there are some doctors that have forms that actually have a box that says adopted. And just let me check a box and move on. Because if I don't have any information to share with you, I'm not going to share what I don't have. So just don't quiz me on it when I'm in the doctor's office. It causes so much stress and I hate it. That's probably also why I haven't changed doctors in like 20 years, because I don't want to go through it again. I have a pretty cool doctor currently, and she will always ask me like, hey, have you learned any new medical information from your brothers? Or, you know, have you discovered any new information? But she asks it in a way that's positive. She still sees me and knows that that's a sore spot for me. You know, adoptees had to deal with people doing things supposedly for them when they were a child. Nobody asked what you wanted. I mean, they can consult me at 9 months old and say, what would you like to do now? You know, they were doing something not only supposedly for you, but to you. And that is, you know, that's a piece that regardless of where you were in the process, that was still something done to you. And everyone has experienced the loss of a significant attachment, even if you were placed directly at birth. So you miss out on the voices of, you know, because you think about it, in utero, you're hearing family, you're hearing music, you're hearing fighting, you're hearing communication. Maybe you're hearing somebody sing or read a book or any type of sound in that environment. And all of a sudden it's gone and it's replaced by a new sound. Maybe there's a different language. Maybe there's different smells. There's all these changes. So it used to be, they had I don't know what you call it, a symbol maybe. There was an adoption triad. So it was a triangle with a heart in the middle, of course. And it represented the child, the birth parents, and the adoptive parents. And so they were like, this forms the adoption triad. So what they're saying now is the new adoption triangle is attachment, trauma, and the 7 core issues of adoption and permanency. Attachment is so important because we need to connect and form meaningful attachment relationships. And early attachment has a profound impact on how we perceive ourselves and others within our world. So not surprisingly, many adoptees have an anxious attachment as children and into adulthood. I was scrolling around through TikTok the other day, and attachment styles are like all over TikTok at the moment. And I was like, oh, look at that. I have anxious attachment. I can totally see that. And then when I was doing a little bit more research for this podcast, I was like, oh yeah, well, I wonder where that came from. So it's interesting to see how even something that would have impacted me that many years ago can still have such a profound effect on me today. If you were a child that went from your biological family into a foster system, you're automatically in survival mode. You don't get roots. And how many foster homes you went to, how many times did you have to detach? I think I had 1 or 2 foster homes in the amount of time that I went from my family to my adoptive family. But you're rootless at the time. And the purpose of an attachment is to provide that safety and the protection. You know, if there was somebody that had violence, maybe mom ignored them, or maybe you're attaching to the wrong people, or maybe you were attaching to a relative that ended up not keeping you and sending you off into the adoption system. So, you know, that can all play into how someone perceives themselves even going into adulthood. So some of the big things for the 7, whatchamacallits I just talked about, adoption is life altering. There's intergenerational impacts. There was one really interesting thing that I listened to a speaker, and she talked about how through losing your place in a family, maybe you were born first, so you're the oldest. And when you were adopted, you became an only child, as it was in my case. I went from being the oldest to an only. And that can mess with how you perceive things, because there are certain personality traits and certain things that we do in birth order. That stuff has been looked at for years. But those losses can be life-altering. they are profound, and it can change the trajectory of a life. So it wasn't understood at the time, many years ago, like when I was going through the adoption system, that some of these losses from adoption unfold over time. And it, as you develop, certain things manifest themselves in our bodies, our minds, and our hearts. This speaker that I was getting some information from, she said that they notice that kids can be anxious, sad, depressed, reactive, angry. She said one common thing was keep losing things. Maybe they would do all their homework, but somewhere between home and school, they would lose it. Extremely destructive, self-punishing, could also be emotionally flat or numb. Fearful was another one, and not just fear as in like, I am afraid of you, but fear as in waiting for the other shoe to drop. That is one that I have said, I don't know how many times in my life where I will say something like, you know, just waiting for the rest of it to hit, or, you know, this is only part of it. I know the rest is coming, or waiting for the basket to fall out, or something along those lines. You know, that can be played out in those doctor visits, having to fill out that stupid form. Maybe adoptive parents haven't dealt with their own infertility struggles, which is how you came to be. And how many losses did you suffer? So this particular speaker said that you have to do like a loss inventory and kind of look through all these things and how did they impact you to understand like what did you lose and how that then ripples through your life. It's like the butterfly wings thing and how one butterfly flapping their wings can then ripple things all the way across the world. Ultimately, you know, one thing that I dwell on and I think about is I lose the truth of my beginnings. I lose the chance to be a normal kid because my story was talked about and told before I could share it in my own words. No adoptive family should ever be sharing someone else's story, even if it's the kid that they've adopted and, you know, they're small and that kid needs the opportunity to share their own story and to voice it on their own. You can lose your original birth certificate. Mine is an altered copy that I have. And it looks like a copy from a microfiche, which it probably is. But in Michigan, if you were born in the late 70s and had a closed adoption, as I did, you're not entitled to get your original birth certificate. Not allowed. I even went to court to try to get it. They're trying to pass some laws right now to be able to open that up, but I'm not going to hold my breath on that. And then another one, and probably for me, one of the bigger ones that I deal with now is sibling loss. So I was the oldest, and then I had two brothers that came after me that were raised by my biological family. And so the three of us were not allowed to grow up together and to experience that sibling relationship. And all of us are then burdened with the secrecy and the anger at not having those experiences. They were much older before they learned about me. But the way they learned about me, I don't think was the best for them either. They should have been told many, many years ago that they had a sister, and they weren't. Rejection is another big theme that I have to work through. They say the pain of rejection in this form is similar, not just rejection, but being excluded is not so different from a physical injury. So, you know, that kind of thing can really wreak havoc on your system. So I could go on and on this and talk forever, I think. But I just wanted to share some more education, some more thoughts behind how some adoptees, because again, it's not everyone, but how some adoptees process their feelings around birthdays and some of the reasons why we struggle. I hope it's not always going to be that way for me. I hope that someday I will be able to, I don't know if it's come to terms with everything, or I've also heard that as you lose your adoptive parents, that also can ease some of the burden because no longer are you the ungrateful. You, and not to say that my family has ever said that, but it lets some of that pressure go of that's not how I'm going to be perceived for feeling this way or asking these questions or doing this. But it's also just another reminder to be kind to others. You never know the battle that someone is fighting inside. They might have a smile on their face, but you don't know what happens when they go behind closed doors or what's going on in their head. And that's always important to remember. So that's all that I've got for you today. Take care and be well.